Hello, hello, and welcome to Drive Through HR, the internet's number one HR talk show, coming to you daily from 12 to 12:30-ish. I am one of your co-hosts, Crystal Miller, but I am not the only co-host on today. So I'd like to introduce the other co-host and semi-regular guest host, Michael Vandervoort and Dwayne Lay. Hello, guys.
Hey, how are you?
And I'm fantastic. All right, so one of the things that's wonderful about internet podcasting is we can't all talk at once. So, Michael.
We could try.
Sorry.
We could try, but I think we might fail.
I'm great. I'm glad to be here. It's nice to have a chance to catch up with you guys, and all is good in Georgia at the moment.
Well, that is good that all is good in Georgia, because, you know, I don't know that all is well in Wonderland, but I don't want to jump the shark. Dwayne, why don't you say hi, do your little dance?
Hey, everybody. I'm constantly dancing, it feels like. Living the dream here in St. Louis, Missouri, as always. So, but I have had Georgia on my mind, so it's good to know things are well.
Yeah.
Also
okay.
On the show, it just went up exponentially.
And Dwayne is kind of one of those unofficial co-hosts by acclaim or something anyway. So
well, it's kind of funny. Whenever I get the call, I'm like, wow, you guys haven't had anybody cancel on you in a while, huh? All right.
Yeah. Yeah, we were on two roles. One role was we weren't doing any shows at all because nobody had time. And then the second role is we've actually done like a week, and this is the first time we've had a huge hole to fill. So we brought you in because you are the aces at that. So
I figured it was either that or one of you lost a bet. Either way, it's okay.
Yeah.
Maybe we'll call it A, call it B. But, you know, I think it's good that Dwayne's on because we've been kind of kicking around this conversation. About, like, just what's going on in the world, or maybe more specifically, what's going on with the world? Is it just me, or seems to be a little more violent these days?
It's not just you. I mean, all the statistics tell us that it's actually, like, one of the least violent times we've had in the history of mankind, right? But back during the Crusades, we didn't have CNN and Fox News to tell us how horrible everything was. So while there's statistically less violence than there used to be, we see it more, and so we're affected by it more. And boy, there's so many things, there's so many causes, so many excuses really for it, which is kind of how we got into this discussion. And when it is so varied and there's so many different viewpoints and stories going on, you know, it makes it even that much more difficult to navigate office politics and office conversations. You know, because you never know exactly which landmine you're going to step on, so to speak.
Good grief. That's true. Michael, what are your thoughts on that?
I blame social media for pretty much everything. I'm not serious with that comment. But, no, I agree. I tend to agree with Dwayne. I think social media has, you know, it's done cool things like let us get together and do a podcast, which, you know, the three of us will know about at least. And maybe a few others will listen to. Hey, I
my mom listens.
My mom will probably call in if we're not careful.
I gotta watch that because we told people we may take calls today, so we may get some calls.
Well, that would be cool. No, I think that, you know, I think it's the double edge of social media, right? I mean, social media was given credit for starting the Arab Spring, you know, which was viewed as a kind of a, you know, freeing movement for mm-hmm. Egyptians that had been under the, and now they're, you know, you see the other side of it, which is ISIS and, you know, some of these other things that are doing outreach in ways that they could never do before, and, you know, it's having an impact and lets them extend their reach. And, you know, that, I mean, it works just the same as it is for brands, unemployment, and everything else. You know, we get the message mm-hmm. in different ways. The other thing too is I think societally, at least in America, we're so polarized, you know, whether it's presidential candidates or, you know, Black Lives Matter or pick any other of a dozen topics you could focus on, you know, and we just, everybody takes hard positions right now. We don't do a very good job anymore in our society of looking for compromise or the middle. I don't know if you blame social media for that or not, but
I was going to say we've become very bipolar, what I was meaning to say, because my brain and my mouth don't always talk to each other, my brain was saying binary, and my mouth says bipolar. And
right.
My brain says, well, they'll know what I mean. But it is kind of the same thing, right? We are. It's
I mean,
and I think you can trace some of that back just from a political standpoint. I think it's interesting to trace back the rise of the 24-hour news cycle, where it used to be that when the news is on, you're watching news, and now when the news is on, you're watching commentary.
Right.
And this is not, personal ideology aside, when Fox News said, oh, we are actually an entertainment brand. Oh, Rupert Murdoch realized there's a lot of money to be made to spinning the news toward the conservative side and getting those people to pay all the attention to it. You started getting into what you saw depending on which channel you were watching.
Mm-hmm.
And they would spin the news to their own audience, right? And the objectivity is lost. And so what we generally just hear is our side is good and that side is bad. And it doesn't really change based on who's on which side. That's just the story we get. So I think it is interesting that as a country, our mind shift towards that binary standpoint. I think, I'm not going to say it's because of the 24-hour news cycle, but man, that surely has been a big, big influence on it.
Yeah, I agree. I also, last night I was having a beer in a local pub here, and this story about the shooting in San Bernardino was on, and it was being covered there by CNN, surprisingly, because usually, I guess that's, even though they're based in Atlanta, it's not really the news of choice around here where I live. But anyway, it was being covered by CNN, and there were three or four local guys sitting there, and it started a conversation about, this is why we can't get rid of our gun. So there's whatever it is, whatever the numbers are now, 14 people dead, 21 wounded. I carry a gun in my, I have a, not me personally, but this is what I was hearing. I have a concealed carry permit. I have a gun stuck in, right by the seat of my car, a .32 caliber police special. And if that ever happened to me, I'd be able to defend myself. And I was kind of like, man, I wanted to get up and leave the room because I felt like I needed a shower.
Yeah.
That's just my own persuasion, right? But they were fervent about that. And,
keeps on the news, though, Michael. I mean, it's everywhere. I looked on. I sent Duane a message last night about it was a screenshot from my news feed where this guy had his kid armed with a Nerf gun, talking about how everyone needs to get their concealed license and everyone needs to be protected. And the more I scrolled down, the more I saw people I went to high school with, people that I work with. It's just, it's kind of nuts. Like, the answer to violence can't be more violence.
Well, so we tried that experiment, like in Tombstone, or something, I think, and it didn't, I don't know how it worked out, but, a few people are buried anyway. And then the other thing is, where are all these people who are defending themselves, and I probably sound like an asshole, I don't mean to, there's no evidence, no empirical evidence that you can see from any of these incidents that have happened recently where that notion of, if I had a gun, I'd be able to protect myself, helped anybody, because it's not like, it's not like there were a lot of people really doing that, So, because these are ambushes by bad people or deranged people. And, I don't know that anybody has a moment to plan like that, even if they were prepared and trained. So I find that kind of,
go ahead.
I'm sorry. I'm talking over you. Bipolar is not so bad, Duane. I think it's,
I think it would be an exceedingly scary individual. That if you are in a public place, if you're in a grocery store, if you're in a movie theater, wherever you might be, and someone bursts in with a gun, that you don't, at least for a second, freeze up. Like, that's what happens, right? We freeze.
There's studies that talk about that, that say that, you can be armed and you can be ready, but the reality is we don't tend to act in those situations. The presence of mind is not there because the premeditation is lacking. And survival instincts take a second or two to kick in. And that second or two, all a bad guy who already has the premeditation needs to grab your gun and kill you, which is why in a lot of home invasions that have armed weapons, the people that end up getting killed with their own gun.
Right. Yeah. And the kind of person who is going to leap at that opportunity to pull down on somebody, like, who doesn't freeze up, it seems like they're also the ones who have the highest likelihood of, getting liquored up one night and taking exception when mom's meatloaf is a little too dry.
Yeah. And having said all that, somewhere in my house, there we own a gun. I don't know where it is, and I'm pretty sure that ammunition and the gun are far apart, and we've never taken it. I couldn't even find it if I needed it. But I don't think we should do a gun control show or otherwise. But it is it is a perplexing issue. But we'll wind up polarizing a bunch of people. So.
But you know what's funny about that? I was telling Crystal this. I'm setting up one of my son's friends. We're going to come over. And their parents, as we were kind of going back and forth and figuring out the date, she sent me an email and she said, hey, I don't want this to come off the wrong way, but I always like to know before my child goes anywhere, do you have firearms in your home? Mm-hmm. And I thought, you know what, it astounds me. I've never been asked that before by another parent, and I've never thought to ask it. But,
mm-hmm.
Man, that's a really good, hey, where are they? I feel like, hey, we have a BB gun, it's in the garage, it's up high, and I'm like, okay, right on, that's good to know. I never thought about it. So,
mm-hmm.
But to your point, Mike, when you say let's not do a gun control joke, we'll polarize people. So that gets back to the original discussion we started to have, which is how do you deal with this stuff in the workplace?
Right.
Because this is what, as a nation, we're dealing with.
Right.
But when you know that they're all polarizing, how do you have civil discourse? How do you, in the workplace or otherwise, how do you have that civil discourse with people if they hear my opinions? And what do you do with that? How do you breach that chasm?
Yeah, I mean, there's a couple things that are, you know, like some lots of states, Florida, I think, don't live there anymore, but Florida passed a right to carry law. You know,
yeah.
Which made it very difficult for employers to have, you know, consistent policies about prohibiting weapons mm-hmm. on their property, inside their premises, or businesses, you know, that kind of thing. I mean, it's very confusing when people are allowed to carry guns. So how do you have a policy that says no weapons in the workplace?
Right on.
That's one, and it's not an answer, it's a question. The other one thing we did at one of my former employers a long time ago, this decade more or so ago, we did workplace violence training. We had set up a hotline to report concerns. I mean, there are some proactive steps that employees can take, you know, monitor the behavior of employees, make sure people know what to do and what to look for, and supervisors in particular who are responsible for kind of the oversight, you know. So there are some things, but I worked at the post office a long time ago, and I was an employee in Michigan when one of the famous Goin postal shooting things took place. And it was terrible. I mean, I wasn't in the building, but I knew people who got shot at and killed. And, you know, that phrase of going postal actually still kind of set it. I don't really like to use it, but everybody recognizes what it means. But that's why it got started. And a lot of that was driven by some really bad, egregious behaviors by managers. So, I mean, I think companies have to make sure their managers are trained, their managers are accountable, their employees know what to do, that they have a process for people to go in and, you know, raise concerns where they can do it in an atmosphere of trust. So those are a few high level things I'd throw out.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I want to be careful when we talk about stuff, and I don't think we've done it so far, but I do want to be careful to make it look like we're not pointing fingers at in any of these situations going, oh, well, if they had just done this and this and that.
Right.
Because I don't think you really can. Like, we aren't wired to think, oh, so-and-so is going to lose their cool today and just shoot everybody because they don't like us or whatever the case may be. Like, we're not wired to think about that. We kind of think about what's in front of us and what we have to do and our issues and so on and so forth. So I think being mindful is good, but I don't know that we could ever really get to the point to where we can see this happening before it happens. So, you know, I wonder if that's part of why when it does happen, we all tend to stop. Like, there's a collective still, I think, that occurs in some of these shootings. We haven't hit the point of desensitization yet to where we just go along with our business like nothing's changed, the day is normal. So like yesterday when all of this stuff was happening, you know, workplaces kind of slowed down a bit, which makes sense, right? I mean, like, we're not gonna run a full steam. So what's appropriate to do in these situations? Do we all still huddle together around the water cooler or the one TV in the break room and talk through this? Or, you know, as managers, should we stop what we're doing and bring our teams together and have some conversations? Or what's appropriate?
Well, I think we have to recognize, first of all, that the workplaces are our basic ecosystem, right? This is where people get most of the socialization because it's where you're there all the time. You're most time at work with your family for most people. So there has to be some kind of outlet. There has to be some kind of a a grieving process. For nothing else, call it a grieving process, call it a maturization, call it an outlet, whatever. But there has to be something there. And as leaders, I think it kind of behooves people to, you know, set the tone for what's acceptable, what's not. How do you make it a safe place? How do you make it? Where do you draw the boundaries? And I don't know the answer, but I know that there's something that needs to be done with it. There's a responsibility that needs to be acknowledged to try to make sure that people know they're safe, they're accepted, and assuming they don't go off the rails, that they can, you know, speak up and talk about their feelings on an event.
So the other side of that is like the thing that happened over the weekend to the young man, Laquan. I forget the last name, McDonald, Alexander, something, the young man in Chicago who was shot by an officer, you know, and it was on TV. I mean, it was videoed, right? I mean, it was from a dash cam, which is another
Without sound, which is the interesting thing.
Yeah, well.
All the sound appeared from those files.
And I don't know what happened. I don't mean to sound like an expert on it in any way. I just know I saw the video. And then, you know, based on news accounts that I've heard, that officer had a long string of, you know, other incidents behind him, right? And so, and seemingly was still in, you know, and now the chief of police has been fired, and you know, there's a whole role, you know, there's a whole role of things, you know, and I think that brings, I guess that brings me back to my point of accountability from the top, you know. I mean, I think you have to manage it proactively, Duane, which is kind of what you were saying, you know, make sure people have the room to grieve and nowhere to go, and whoever's got the eagle should mute their phone.
Oh, that's me. It was just flying through because I love America so much.
It's a bald eagle on the loose. That's awesome. So anyway, and then the other side.
It's actually wearing a toupee. I'm a little embarrassed by that.
Yeah, and I think dressed like Elvis, rock and roll. And I think the other side is if there's breakdown in accountability, then it leads to eventually these things will come out. You know, you can't stop someone like what happened in San Bernardino, because that was, who knows what's going on there. But there are other situations that are avoidable. You know, workplace violence, not violence that happens outside the workplace and then ripples inside. So there's a couple things.
I'm probably going to sound very much like, you know, the school teacher or, you know, the principal that used to run the fire drills, but I'm a big, big believer in planning. I love planning. And I think that developing a plan for this, I mean, like, first we have to kind of acknowledge, right? We had, last year we were like, what, 166 active shooter situations?
Yep.
This year, a total of like 360-something, 363 or 366 mass shootings for the year, right? So that's interesting. Not good, but interesting. We're ahead of pace for that for this year, and we're like 355, 356, something like that. So it's going to happen. Like, if we accept that this is a reality that is the world that we live in right now, what do we need to do? And I think that the first step that we need to do is develop a plan. Like, where do you go? And I remember thinking a couple of times in some of the buildings that I've worked with, I don't know where to go for a tornado, much less if someone's shooting at me. Like, I have no idea what that would look like. So, I mean, I think part of HR's responsibility is you got to write a plan of action that goes in your policies and your procedures manual, but it's also sent out to your employees. It says, here's where you go. In natural emergencies, go here. Yeah, the stairwell is not good because we forced up there. Go here in case of a tornado. If someone's shooting at you, here's what you need to do. And I know that some of the things that experts have said is like, busy rooms tend to draw violent people in. So, you know, people that are active shooters or they are looking to hurt people, they're more likely to do so in a crowded place than a sparse place, because part of what they're looking for is that attention, right? They want a crowd because they feed off the fear. So, you know, hiding under your desk, hiding in closets, you know, going in places that would make the room that you're in seem less occupied is a really good idea. But, you know, to get that kind of information, you need to talk to people who have actually trained in this. So law enforcement, you know, again, I think from an HR perspective, the first call I'm probably going to make is to my local law enforcement or someone in my community who is an expert in workplace safety to understand, based off of our situation, our workforce demographics, our building, what is the plan that we need to make? And then make that plan. But I think that's kind of like step one, right?
You know, I mean, it makes sense. I think the problem with it is, from a human standpoint, you know, we understand that tornadoes happen, and it's a weather event, and there's nothing we can do about it. But no one, I think, wants to be in the mindset that there's a chance somebody I work with every day might, you know, lose it and come back with a gun. So it makes it really hard to want to plan for it. Because to plan for it, you have to admit that it could happen with one of the people around you. I'm not saying you're wrong by any means. Not at all.
Yeah, I agree with you. But where I was jumping in is, like, it doesn't necessarily have to be somebody you work with. And I think Sandy Hook thought of that.
Right? Well, I agree. But I think that's, I think, where people will get hung up with trying to do that planning. Is, yeah, but it won't happen here.
Yeah, and that's great. So just be tornado planning. You know, you hope you never get stuck in a tornado, but when you do, darn, it feels good when you have a place to go.
So if I can make an analogy, and again, I'm not disagreeing with you. Again, I'm with you 100%, but as an analogy. My home in St. Louis, where I was born and raised, sits on the New Madrid Fault. Okay? We know at some point that thing is going to go and tear the city down. Like, we know it. It hasn't happened in a long time, but we know it's coming. I will tell you, employers here, I've never worked at one that had an earthquake during its plan. Because it's come on, it's not going to happen inside real soon. Somebody else will deal with that. It's really hard to get into that idea of, hey, okay, we got to plan for this. And I think it would be great if there was some resource, and maybe there is, if there was some resource for people who said, like, I know we have to deal with this. I don't know where to start. Okay, we can help you. Here's where you start. Here's the website. Here's where you go. I don't know if that exists. I hope it does.
OSHA, SHRM, they probably have something. Your friendly law firm. I was at a meeting at a law firm in Atlanta, and the couple of the legal staff were in the meeting. And since we were in their space, they actually opened, but we were guests, not workers. They actually opened the meeting with a short safety training. They told us where the emergency exits were. We were on the 15th floor. And I was kind of like, well, this is a big waste of time because, on the other hand, it took 5 minutes or less, and it did tell me where to run, to Crystal's point, if there was some need to flee the 15th floor, right? And so maybe it wasn't as silly as it seemed in the context of what we're talking about today. But while I was hearing it, I was kind of rolling my eyes, going, you know, can't we just get started? But
I think a lot of companies doing that. But you know, here's where I'm going to sound all Debbie Downer or Debbie Drama or whatever. But it's going to suck if you end up being the person that has to look family members in the eye and say, here's why they died. I didn't think this would happen in our office.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's just, you know, I get what you're saying, and I hear it, and I probably would think it too. But then where my head goes is, yeah, but I really don't want to be the one to explain that I was too lazy to do this because I didn't want to admit that it could happen.
Right.
And that's where all the excuses fall short, right? Like, it just doesn't take that much in the grand scheme of plan for this, but I think the reality is we gotta, especially in large companies, right? I think the bigger your company, the bigger your risk factor. And you know, the cynical part of me wants to know, and maybe somebody who works in insurance can tell us this, I wonder if there's an insurance discount for having that kind of preparedness. Again, being a little glib, but I mean,
people respond to incentives, right? That's a heck of a question.
Yeah, there may be some benefits to that. I know that there were benefits when I was running HR for us to have extra preparedness plans and extra safety measures within our organization. So I can't help but wonder if the same kind of thing exists or if it will the more that these kind of situations come up. But if you go so far as to make a plan, do you then take the extra step and do the drill? So could you be actually doing practice drills on this kind of stuff the way that our kids do practice drills with tornadoes?
Yeah, the answer is yes, you can. So by the way, just while I'm sitting here, quick Google search reveals that I don't know what OSEC, Office of Security, but I'm not sure where this is from. It's a .gov, so this is something inside our federal government has a workplace violence prevention PowerPoint. SHRM has resources available on their website. You can just put in workplace violence training, and there's a downloadable module there. And then the CDC, which is also on the first page of Google, offers a occupational violence training and education online learning course for nurses. So there's I mean, I don't know how good any of that stuff is, but that's just, you know, that's just randomly what I hit. So
there are already there's already government resources available for this stuff. That's awesome. Thanks, Obama.
Yep. Yeah. And whoever else, maybe even Bush before him. Who knows?
But what was the first one that you said? So could you say that one more time for our listeners?
I'll post the links on Twitter. I mean, I like I'm saying, I don't know if they're any good. It's the Office of Security, but I don't know what government agency it's from, because it's OSEC. OSEC.doc.gov, and then there's a whole long thing. So I'll throw them out there. But yeah, anyway. But there's, you know, if you search Google, there's tons of stuff, and I haven't looked through everything. And by no means are these recommendations. When I worked in Anderson Windows years ago, that's one of the places where we implemented a workplace violence, a no tolerance policy, actually, and we did supervisory and employee training around the no tolerance policy for violence, and I think it was inclusive even of other types of behavior like discrimination and other things. We kind of lumped it into one big category. But we had experts in that we hired. I can't tell you who they were. Sat through a course on how to talk to your employees about workplace violence and what to do, what signs to look for, and what, you know, where to, how to tell them to report it, and all that sort of thing. So that stuff's been around for a while.
Is there anything more terrifying than being a young HR professional who's told, "Hey, you've got an employee who's made threats. I need you to sit down and talk to them"?
Oh, I don't know that that's appropriate.
It happens, though. It happens on the regular. I mean, that's got to be the most terrifying part of being new in HR, is being told, go handle this situation.
I'm not sure it's any better even if you're not new. What if you're firing somebody that has a history of volatility? Yeah. Have you ever brought the law into your workplace in advance of a termination?
Yes, I have. That it's appropriate to do on your own. I have brought law enforcement in when I was having to terminate an employee that was known for alcoholism and violence. And it's just,
I have also, although they usually were standing by in reserve, where if something would have happened, they would only been nearby, but probably not. It wasn't like they were standing with our, you know.
Yeah, no. They weren't in the room. Yeah. It was a room with a door, yeah. Like, so you're in a room that has a door that goes to another room, a dining room, whatever.
Yeah.
I will tell you,
I've never done that, but I have on more than one occasion been told that I was going to be that person, that I was going to be the one on call in case something went wrong. I was like, great, thanks. Because
well,
I was the only guy in the department.
Right, like, we grab the resources at hand, but they aren't necessarily the resources prepared. So I think,
right.
You know, to our earlier conversation about planning and training and whatnot, if you're going to use internal resources for that kind of thing, it's important that they go through some conflict training and some, you know, some sort of preparation for what they're going to have to deal with. And those classes exist. I mean, they're at local junior colleges, safety training and defense courses. I mean, if you're going to put your employees at that kind of risk, then you need to make sure they're trained.
Agreed.
Mm-hmm.
Although I'm going to guess that they didn't do that for you.
They did not.
Sorry.
You're
no,
on
I was
your
brand
own,
new to
Dwayne.
HR. I was brand new to HR. I was the only male in the department. So they made me the bouncer. I was like, okay, all right, well. You know, and I didn't. I never crossed my mind that there would be an issue. So, you know, back when I was, young and dumb. So I'm not young anymore.
I had to do terminations on the third shift of people who were being terminated based upon the results of an in-house security drug investigation, and I was terminating people on the third shift by myself. And
wow.
These were people who were being terminated because they had allegedly been caught either using, buying, or selling drugs on our property. So I basically was, you know, firing potential drug dealers.
Yeah, what could possibly go wrong?
Yeah, I'm the third shift in Dallas by myself, pretty much. So it was. I mean, there was another supervisor around, but we were in the back of a building. You know, it was awesome.
Yeah.
And it never even entered my mind, like, you know, this,
right.
like you said, you just went in there and did it because that's what needed to be done. You know, so
would it now? If you were asked to do that now, would you think about all the things we see on the news and think, no way?
I don't know. I'm fatter and smarter, so I don't move as fast, and I know more, so it's possible. We'll see. Back then, I was thinner and dumber. So, anyway, yeah, I think it probably would. Seriously, I think it probably would think twice about it, or at least, you know, go, hey, what's our response plan if something goes sideways here? It didn't happen as often, or if it did, to your point earlier, we didn't hear about it so much. So, anyway.
And maybe it's the virtue of, like, I've had kids my entire adult life, and I've been divorced most of that time. So, you know, it's been me looking after the girls. So one of the thoughts I've always had is, like, what am I doing at work? How is that going to impact my ability to take care of my kids? So for me, I just didn't take a lot of those risks because I couldn't afford to. Because if something happened to me, then, you know, what happens to the girls?
Yeah. Yeah.
So, you know, and I think I wonder if we're going to see more of that. And maybe I want to think that so that I just don't think I'm on, like, totally selfish and attitude there. But is it possible that we'll see more of that attitude of, like, hey, Mr. Employer or Mrs. Employer, you know, corporation that writes my paycheck, I'm not going to put myself in harm's way for you. And you do have a responsibility to protect me, then I'm working for you. And maybe have seen more employees demand that kind of preparation and knowing that there's a plan. Or maybe you can go back to, I don't want to think about that being a possibility.
Yeah, I think human nature is to deny that it's a possibility, and so we don't prepare.
You, Crystal, didn't you have a situation where didn't your daughter deal with, like, some kind of bullying thing here a while back through school or something?
Yeah. So my daughter, my eldest daughter has a chronic illness, so she's sick a lot. She missed over 30 days a year, and the hope is that she'll grow out of that as long as continue to mature, but she has asthma. She is missing 7 of her immune markers all of the time. So she gets sick a lot. So she misses a lot of school. That alone is enough to make her different. And quite frankly, when children are young, they don't like different. They like mommy.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And so anything that makes the kids stick out is a bad thing. So when you couple that with her speech impediment that she's had since she was very small, she got made fun of a lot. And the teachers weren't equipped to stop it. And so, and the substitutes even less so. So one of her teachers was out for like a week, and the substitute teacher was barely older than the student. And, I guess was like 10 years older than the student, but wasn't old enough, didn't have the experience to shut it down. So my daughter was being picked on so mercilessly that she got hit in the bathroom and cried and was like, I'm never coming out. Called me on my cell phone and was like, I can't do this anymore. I can't be there anymore. And that was her response to it, was to go and hide in the bathroom where no one would be and call me. And that's heartbreaking, right? But,
right.
You know, the school, I mean, my response to the school was, you have a responsibility to protect my child. I, by law, have to take my kid to your school. So you have to protect her. And if you can't, that's a fail on your part. And we seem to accept that as parents and when it comes to education, that, you know, the school has a responsibility to keep our students safe. But I don't know so much that we think about that in terms of work, right? Or at least I don't see it in some of the actions that we take, just doing things like, hey, let's make our employees the bouncer. And let's
yeah.
put them in
Yeah. Well, I guess where I was going with the question is, I see it as being somewhat analogous to the workplace, right? Schools and the way people
mm-hmm.
behave and how parents, because, you know, how you reacted may not be how somebody else chooses to react over their daughter having an issue. You know, they might go kick someone's ass or threaten to do, you know, that kind
well,
of thing. And,
let's not
know.
Forget, it is a workplace. just not for the kids.
That's true. That's true.
So,
yeah. But, well, what I meant was the workplace discussion. Yeah. We were talking about it from an HR perspective. It's a different,
yeah.
But it's essentially the same thing. And to your point, not everyone in that situation you dealt with was trained and capable of dealing with it. So that's probably the root issue. Hey, listen, I know we've gone over 1:30, and I have another call I got to get ready for. So I'm going to have to bail off what I thought was going to be a fill-in show, and it's turned out to be a pretty cool discussion. But it was great to chat with you guys, and. And I didn't get to wish you happy. I don't think either one of you happy Thanksgiving. So early Merry Christmas, and all the good holiday wishes and all that kind of stuff. All right.
You too, Mike. You too.
Hey, well, we've got him on here. And before you run off, next week is a very important week for our friend Dwayne Lay. It's his birthday coming up. We should wish him happy birthday.
Ooh, happy birthday! Happy birthday!
Hey, thanks very much. Thanks very
which
much.
Day is the event?
12th day of the 12th month. That would be me.
Awesome. I'm gonna make sure I get some fireworks here in Georgia and set them off. And in your
honor. I'll keep an eye on the night sky.
Awesome. All right, you guys take care. See you soon.
All right,
bye.
Thanks for a great discussion. All right. Well, Dwayne, thanks for joining us today. It was fantastic. And for everyone else listening, you know, if you're looking for resources, they're out there. Do a quick Google search. The Washington Post, I think, has some things out today. Entrepreneur has 7 steps to keep your workplace safe. But look into it. And if you don't have a plan, get one. It was great. Have a good day. And thank you for joining Drive Through HR.